So I'm going to straighten out these socks for everybody. That's how I'm going to start the show. We have, in case you don't know the logo, because you don't ever look in the sky to see the beam, we have Batman. Batman socks start the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Father Knows Something. Tonight, we have all kinds of stuff to really touch base on before we get kicked in, but we have Justin with us. We have, as you guys have met Uncle Jimmy, we have Jimmy visiting us still. He goes home tonight, so this is it for Uncle Jimmy for a while.
We get to exploit him one more time.
One more shot. But before we go anywhere, I you know, some of you don't really know what some of us do during our normal daily lives. Justin is a music creator and producer. And yesterday, they went to the happiest place on earth. And we all know where the happiest place on earth is. Jimmy, where is the happiest place on earth?
Disneyland.
Absolutely. So why did they go to Disneyland yesterday is because in the area, which they call Toontown, I believe it's Toontown.
It is.
And there was a competition for different music creators to come up with the music that would be playing in the background throughout the day. Day in and day out for however long for Toontown. And the guy that created that music that plays sits right to my left.
And part of it.
Part of it?
A part of it, yeah.
Well, you and your partner.
Yeah, but there's multiple, it's a full 20-minute loop or 30-minute loop.
I see. So what was your, what did you actually do to this besides go listen to it? Did you have?
We have a song in there.
And you have part of the creation of that song.
Yeah.
He's humble, guys, but it certainly has his masterpiece in it. So when you hear the beginnings of Two Hot Takes in the music and you hear the music for Father Knows Something, he's not only the creator of that, but he has stuff in Disneyland, which is very cool. And I'm very proud of you. And it gives me great proudness because he wasn't going to say a thing. And I just said, nah, they got to know, they really want to know more about us because they're our family.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. And Uncle Jimmy, do you have anything to say this as you are coming to the end of your visit?
Well, this day is certainly bittersweet. I luckily and happily get to do another episode with my best friend. So I'm thrilled about being here and doing this, but I'm going to be flying out tonight on the red eye and that's going to be sad.
And don't think that we didn't make Uncle Jimmy sit in the studio. I think he sat in here for a few of my shows. He sat in a few of your shows. He did some Patreons. So we got a lot of Uncle Jimmy this week. So I think it's really great. So Justin?
Okay. Well, are we guessing the theme anymore? No, we shut that down. We're done with that. We're going to be weighing our options today.
Weighing the options.
Yes.
Should we get actually a balance scale right here and we could actually have...
I think that's a great visualizer.
And yeah. We could have had an option A or an option B and watched the little thing go like this.
Yeah. What happens if option C? Do they just balance?
It balances, yeah.
Oh, and then neither of them are in? Or they both fall?
It still balances.
It just falls over?
If nothing is done, it still balances, unless it was totally out of kilter in the beginning. But that was because somebody put something on that scale.
Okay.
Are we confused yet?
No.
Good.
Any thoughts?
No, I'm good with it.
All right.
All right. So let's get into it.
Number one, hey guys, I've been watching for quite a while to both shows and now I'm having this issue. I thought I could write in and ask you guys about it. Apologies ahead of time if this is long and or scattered. I, 24 female, am marrying my wonderful fiance, 25 male, next year, 2024, in October, and I'm struggling with deciding if I should invite my mother or not. Background. I wasn't raised by her or my father and instead was raised by my grandparents, my mother's parents, because the courts took me and my older brother away. I see them as my real mom and dad, though. I call them grandma and grandpa. I still knew my mom and saw her all the time growing up due to court-mandated visitation. However, growing up, it was always apparent that I was not the favorite. My brother, 27 male, always was. I don't fault him for this, and he and I have a great relationship. My mother has diagnosed narcissistic personality disorder and is bipolar. Due to this, she can often go long periods of time where she's great and there's no problems, but unfortunately, that never lasts forever. The way I usually put it is she's really good at faking it until she makes it, until she can't fake it anymore and the mask falls. Due to her NPD, she can't stand when major events aren't centered around her and will make it about her, whether that's in a positive or negative way. The best and most recent example of this was my college graduation, when she ruined it by getting into an insane argument with my father, and finally I blew up at her and told her exactly what I thought about her. The next day, she had the audacity to text me and say that she forgives me and never said that she was sorry. After that, I went no contact for almost 2 years and only recently started talking to her again. Low contact when I told her I was engaged a few months back. On to now. I've been struggling with whether to invite her or not for a while now, but yesterday she texted me asking all kinds of questions about the wedding, like date, venue, dress, and things like that. She was even offering to help with any planning and even paying for some stuff. My grandpa's already going to pay for most of the wedding. It's not that I don't appreciate her wanting to help, I just don't want her to get invested in a wedding she may not even be invited to. My main concerns are that if I do invite her, there may be a situation that will have to be dealt with, and I don't want all my friends and family to have to worry about if/when it will happen. If I don't invite her, I feel like I'm robbing her of her only daughter's wedding, and there's no guarantee anything bad will even happen. Additionally, I am inviting my father. They're not together and haven't been since I was 3, but I feel bad for inviting one and not the other. I'm not super close with my father, but we're on good terms. I know my mother is trying to have a good relationship with me, and I know she wishes she wasn't this way, but I can't help but worry that something will go wrong anyway.
Okay. Wow. At first, in the first couple of sentences, it just seemed like, of course you're going to invite your mom, your parents, your grandparents, the people in your family you're closest to. Certainly you would want them there. They're going to want to be there. But it became pretty obvious that this is definitely not somebody that you should invite to your wedding. First of all, I mean, you gave examples of how if it's not centered around her, then, you know, unfortunate things could happen. If she is there, maybe everything will go smoothly. Everything will go great. But you are going to be worried sick about it all day and probably for the week or so before the wedding. You're just, this is such a special day for you that you need to make it comfortable for you and the things that are going to make your memories good. And the stress of having her there is just too much.
So just for the people that are the podcast listeners and not the YouTube viewers, that was Uncle Jimmy that we've told him that we're going to have him chime in first just so we can hear him speak because we don't get to hear him that often. So Jimmy, I think that you are absolutely correct. And I can't alter the fact that this woman is so predictable that it's in her nature, like a bee would sting somebody if they went swatting at the hornet's nest. It's going to happen. There's going to be stinging. There was once a movie, There Will Be Blood, and there was. So we all recognize that this woman, because of her diagnosis, as much as she may promise not to be an issue, as much as you may go to her and say, you know, Mom, I want you to come, but the first sign there's a problem, you're going to be removed. We've had these readings before where we've said we're going to have a guard on, you know, we're going to have security that if someone gets out of hand, out the door they go. I think that you can certainly talk to your mom and let her know why you're not having her come enjoy this event. It might simply be at minimum, and I don't even know if this is reality, where she's allowed to come witness the ceremony, but she's not staying for the party, because at the party, she may go AWOL. She might even come into the wedding before you come down the aisle and go AWOL. We just don't know how she's going, to what limit she is going to exercise her ability to gain that attention. And because of that problem is why she can't really be there. And Jimmy, you're absolutely right. Why do you need to worry on the day of your wedding how your mom's going to behave? It's just not a part of it. So I feel for you. I know when I first, heard the topic, my first thought was, you want your mom to be able to come and, witness you getting married. And, she's a part of who you are. She's a part of the reason you're here. But as you read on, the bottom line is that it's going to be an issue. And again, I agree. You can't have it. Justin?
Yeah. And for the ideal outcome, for my wedding to be a great day, whether she is or isn't there. If she is there, I'd want nothing to go wrong. But if she isn't, I want to be okay with that. And this is coming down to this is a gut decision. And that anything else, I live in a different state as my mom now. My mother did raise two little brothers. If I did invite her and something went wrong, I have plenty of people who would deal with the situation so that I wouldn't have to. If I did invite her, should I have strict rules for her? I feel like I'm grieving not having a real mom.
Well, here's the options that I see. If she is going to be there, she has to be in a place where they can, where she agrees that she can't be a part of the show. She's not a part of the show. She's a witness to the show. And number two, if she doesn't agree that, if you don't really believe that that's even possible, you put a video camera and you let her watch the video of the wedding from a remote place so she can have a fit and throw the camera around. If that's, and I'm exaggerating, of course, I don't think that would happen, but she realizes that she cannot do something that's going to cause a problem on that physical site. So if you have family that says, I'm willing to take that responsibility and we're going to sit in the back of the, or up in the balcony above, and she can watch it. But, she got herself here. You didn't put her in this place.
True.
Her behavior is something that whatever was her upbringing or whatever triggered this behavior, chemistry, what went, in her DNA. I don't know enough about, the syndrome. I know nothing about it. So all I can say is that I'm going to believe there is a syndrome. I'm going to believe that this is something that is real and that her behavior will certainly kick in and she's going to want to become the star of your own wedding. And she is not the star. She is simply a witness to the wedding. And that is something that you guys are going to have to be comfortable with. And if you can't get comfortable with that concept, she's got to watch it through a videotape or a videographer.
Well, and something too, it's next year, 2024. There's a lot of 2023 left.
Oh my God, yes.
And so you could, if you wanted to, you could.
It's 18 months away, basically.
Yeah, but you could almost schedule something with her. Mm-hmm. I know she's in a different state, but do like a weekend trip or something and just kind of get a feel, because this is going to be a gut choice. This is going to be a gut decision. And, it can be done in 2024 as far as we're concerned. So there's ways you could kind of like test it out and see what the vibe is now, how your interaction goes. Maybe be in public with her, maybe try different situations and just see. And if you get a better feeling, then put some of the people that you say could deal with it, make sure that they're near her at this wedding.
The bottom line is that even if you have these meetings with her and she says, I'm going to behave, and she demonstrates all this positive behavior for the next,
you never know,
for this next, 17 months, the month before, and all of a sudden we're at 17 months, 29 days, and she's been great and the wedding, And we said, sure than shit, this woman's going to do her behavior. The family's all going to be together. Dad's going to be there. This is going to be there.
Yeah.
And her parents are going to be there. And all of a sudden, she's going to say, this is my baby. And you're going to have this whole thing flare up because it's predetermined. She can't help herself.
True.
And even if she doesn't, are you going to be comfortable during this whole 8 hours? Look at him.
I mean, no way. I can't see a good outcome with the mother coming. But since you do have all this time, and if you do meet with her, plan a trip, like Justin said, might be a great idea. I would try, and this is going to be hard to navigate, but I would try very hard to not invite her until the last, moment. Obviously, you have to give her some time. Mom might need to get a dress and all of that. But you don't need to invite her early. You tell the mom, look, I'm having reservations about you being there, and this is why. We could communicate. We can talk. We can see how things go. And I will let you know at some point in time, but right now, you're not invited. It's a lot easier to invite somebody later than to uninvite them.
And if you hear Jim's tone as he's saying this, he is very calm. He is delivering the message responsibly and in the most clearly honest possible way. And that's the way you have to pitch this, because otherwise you're just going to incite her and you're going to have a battle. And the last thing you want to do is have the fight.
Well, speaking of that, I would not accept any money from her.
Ooh.
Especially if you're planning to not invite her, that's quickly going to turn into a very bad situation for you. And if she comes and something happens and you like push her out or they deal with the situation, that's going to be held over your head still too. So I just would avoid that from the get-go.
I agree.
I didn't want to forget about that part.
Sure.
I feel for you.
Mm-hmm.
But, it is what it is. And the fact that you're reading the situation so clearly at this point in time tells me that you're going to make some great choices. So
yeah,
let us know. We'll be around in 18 months. Certainly write us and let us know your progress and how it's going for you.
Yes.
What else do you have for us? You got another one?
Trigger warning on this next one, you guys. It does have talks of emotional and physical abuse. All right. Number?
Two.
Perfect.
Two.
I, 22,
two.
Female, am struggling with cutting ties with my dad, 53.
Okay.
We don't talk much as it is, but lately he's been trying to reach out more often. My dad was emotionally and physically abusive to me from ages 8 to 14. My parents were divorced, so things started getting bad when they divorced and stopped the physical abuse once my mom threatened to take him to court. I was told almost every day, quote, you make everyone around you miserable. It took me a long time to learn that wasn't true. I got told again and again that my thoughts, feelings, opinions didn't matter. He would lock me outside at night, throw me on stairs, hit me into pavement till I couldn't get up anymore. When I do see my dad, I feel anxious, afraid, and angry. I turn into the most hateful and irritable person. I don't like being that way. I feel guilty about cutting contact with him, but I also want to be able to move past all of that trauma. I feel like continuing to avoid him is just making things worse for me and for him. He wants to see me before my birthday and keeps asking about us getting lunch. I always thought writing a letter would be best. I know he will gaslight me and say nothing ever happened. We've never talked about what happened. The physical abuse just stopped one day and we never talked about it again. I genuinely don't really know what to say. I know I will feel guilty about cutting ties, but ultimately I think it's best for my mental health. Ideal outcome, to cut ties and prioritize my mental health. Additional info, I do still want to be in contact with that side of my family. I don't know how to explain to them that I don't want any connection to him.
If fans that are watching this episode have seen me in other episodes, you know that I had an incredibly close relationship with my father. Couldn't imagine a closer relationship between a father and son. And so hearing this, the first thought was, yeah, I mean, if there's any way to mend this relationship, it's worth it. And I've had friends who didn't have a great relationship, and I've always encouraged them to build, try to build something back with their fathers. And sometimes it works, sometimes not. Normally it does work, but it's never been this type of situation where there's been abuse like this. Not the situation where the father so mistreated his own daughter in this way. This is, you know, beyond the pale. And you provided such insight yourself with your mental health. And although it's great to have a relationship with your dad, your mental health is what is the most important thing. And I would say in this particular case, it's better for you not to have a relationship. If you still communicate somewhat with him as he reaches out, that you have to decide whether zero contact or extremely limited contact is appropriate. But as far as the rest of your family, they know. They know what he's put you through. They understand the situation. And if they don't, you can explain it to them. If you want to have a relationship with other members of the family that somehow are not aware, you just give them the scoop and they'll, I think, appreciate it.
I was thinking a 30-year-old man is beating the shit out of this child. And not only a child, male or female, you just don't hit kids and we just don't do it. I mean, you just don't hit people, period. So all that said, you have tremendous psychological scars from this event. And your father has done nothing to try to heal or even have a discussions to take ownership of this issues and to help you cope with whatever you're going through in your life, because this had to affect you as a young adult growing up and trying to have relationships with people. So there's all kinds of stuff that's needed here. I don't know if you've gone for psychological assistance. I don't know if your father has gone for any kind of psychological assistance. I don't know if you guys have gone to counseling between you and your dad and trying to, it doesn't sound like any of that has been any part of any play. So all that said, until anything would begin, I think you have all the right in the world to just cut it off and worry about your own mental sanity and stability and put things back in place. And in your mind say, you know, absolutely, this is not a way life is. And anyone that treats me this way is out, no matter who they are, they're out of my life. And so I give you a lot of encouragement and stand with you and behind you with whatever you do decide to do. And I certainly know that after having a few of these comments, they're going to resonate within you. And I'm sure they've resonated in you way before we've had this conversation. But we stand with you tall that you need to protect yourself, because if you don't protect yourself, obviously he isn't.
So do you find that if we look at just her and him right now, do you feel like the letter is a good strategy?
Yeah, I would definitely say write the letter and say for the following reasons is why I'm choosing not to be involved with you. Go, if you decide to seek some therapy regarding why you reacted the way you did, what you did, and then later involve us in a group session, I'd be willing to go to a group therapy with you and see if we can heal this. But I'm not even going to come around you until after you get you accept the problem, you acknowledge the problem, and then we can work on us. And I would identify that first, because she has no need to get involved with him, period, until after he has really gone and sought help.
Right.
And realizes there was something that he did, and whatever his anger was, to go do this to a child, to then say, look, you know, I've done the following work, and now I'm willing to, I need to see if you're interested in coming, you know, meeting me at the psychologist so we can talk about it and maybe heal all this. You can't heal something if you don't open it up. It's just not going to happen.
Right. And then, Jimmy, I know you were kind of talking about the explaining to, you know, his side of the family. What strategy would you use there? Is that kind of more of a sit down in person kind of thing? Or how do you really bridge that gap with them?
Yes, definitely. I don't know how many different family members there are, but sitting down with one or two at a time to explain the situation is appropriate. A letter would not be appropriate in that case, because
right.
you're just, you know, telling your story. It is, as I said, I can't imagine that they don't already know. But it's also, I'm very impressed about how mature OP is, because I could see where a 22-year-old would say, I really miss having a dad. I have to have a dad in my life. He has to be my dad. I have to figure out how to fix this. And it's not your responsibility to fix it. It's your responsibility to maintain your sanity and your health.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the father's responsibility. If, you know, the therapy that Jerry mentioned sounds spot on, that the father, though, is not even acknowledging. It's bad enough, all the things that he did. He's not even acknowledging it. So,
right.
I mean, I don't know if therapy would help solve it, but it's something the father should definitely do.
True. Okay.
Well, I think that we have that one, and I hope that you follow through and let us know what you did do. And I'm sure, you know, there's going to be a lot of comments on this one too.
Yeah.
And people are going to want to know how you did handle it. So let us know.
Okay.
You got another one for us? We got time?
Perhaps.
Let's go.
Number three. My 23 non-binary childhood best friend, 23 female, lost her father a few days ago. They had a complicated relationship, which is one of the things we bonded over. I also have a difficult relationship with my parents. We've remained extremely close for over a decade now. Usually I know exactly how she is feeling and how to help. We've been each other's rocks most of our lives. But with his passing, I have no idea what to do. She's been extremely emotionless throughout this. She was actually out of the country when he was admitted to the hospital and was still on a plane back to the U.S. when he passed. Every update she's sent or text has been fax only. I know it's recent, but I have no idea what to do. She's not always the most open person emotionally, but I know this must have hit her very hard, even with the complex relationship. I'm struggling trying to figure out how to help her. We are still so young, and I feel like I have no resources on what to do. She's an amazing person with so much stress on her plate already, and I'm scared that this is going to break her. We also live in different cities, which makes it hard for us to see each other in person. I'm worried about her breaking down or needing my help weeks or months from now and me being too far away. I'm scared of what will happen if she keeps this bottled in, but I'm also trying to respect her grieving process but not pushing her too much and letting her lead the conversations we're having. How do I help her? I haven't lost a parent, and she is my first close friend to do so. I want to support her the best way I can to hopefully get her through this.
Jimmy?
My first thought is, it's obvious you're already a very good friend, and you're doing the things that I think are the right thing to do. You're there for her. And maybe, you know, none of us will know the right words to say to somebody in this situation, and it's complicated because of the relationship that she had with her dad. But when somebody passes away, a family member, still a very close family member, it's still your dad passing away, her dad passing away. So certainly I agree with you that it's definitely affecting her emotionally. And the fact that just try to talk to her about it. And even though she doesn't normally open up, you might be surprised and she might one day start crying or just letting it all hang out. Mm-hmm. And when that time comes, she'll need you. And I think you'll be there for her.
There's a lot of unfinished business that when somebody has a difficult relationship with a parent and the parent ups and drops dead, everything is not settled. And all the things that you wonder why get stuck. There's nowhere for it to go. And the fact that she's holding everything in and she's trying to cope with all this, you want to be that friend, as you say, I have an idea. You know, sometimes people are afraid to get assistance to put things in hand because they say, I can't afford it or I can't do this. Maybe, I don't know your financial position, but maybe if you say to her, you know, we're friends, and if we work together, maybe we can raise the money that can help you get some counseling. Or there are other ways that you can find counseling for her. If she can't open up to you because whatever, maybe a professional is needed to help her. Grieving is a tough thing to go through in the best case scenarios, when we have the best relationships with our parents and everything is settled, we still have to go through grief. It's a part of the life cycle. And we don't know really how it hits, but you can talk to many people that have lost a parent and subconsciously, they know the date the parent went. And so a year from now or on that anniversary, 7 years from now, that date, you know, that July 25th, for instance, pops up and you go, God, I don't understand why I'm having such a difficult day today.
Yeah.
Because your subconscious knows it and it's reacting to it without you even knowing it. So this is all going on within her. And obviously she has to find a gateway to get out of it. And if it works by just being there and being a friend and during time, it will go through the healing is one way. But if it needs some extra assistance professionally, maybe you might say, you know, I'd like to go, you know, help you out in any way I can, or I'll get an extra job because it's so important to me that you have it available to you, that I'll help you in any way I can. And that shows that friend that you really want to help them.
Yeah.
More than just saying, gee, I'm here for you. That's really being there. That's saying without her even asking you for that help, you put something on the table. And she may decline it, and she probably will decline it, but it's something that is probably really necessary only because of the abuse and the toxicity that she may have gone through in that upbringing that she cannot in any way get healed from with reason to it. You know, the last story we had, there is a possibility that after she writes that letter, she's got a place to write that letter too.
Right.
You know, this is the thing that you have to go to your spiritual side and say, I got to throw this and let this go. Like, you know, people go up to Burning Man and they go to the temple with heavy weight that they still have and they write down that heavy weight or they bring a shoe of their father and they, with the heavyweight note tied to the shoelace, they toss it into the fire to get rid of all that weight.
Mm-hmm.
Something symbolic. I'm not that this clever. I just know that I believe that there is ways that you have to deal with it. And eventually, I know from my own experience, you have to deal with it. You have to become,
yeah,
you know, clear of it.
Well, and I probably should have read this, but the ideal, I would love for her to be able to process this however she needs, but I don't want to just suggest therapy as that feels impersonal and she already knows I'm a very big mental health advocate and I've suggested it to her for other things which she has turned down, which is only a very small part of what you said. I think you're demonstrating of just really being there for her for whatever she really needs. Mm-hmm. And then with what Jimmy said, I think it's smart to be there, and then you're not like poking, but you're waiting for that moment. If there is that moment where she opens up and kind of lets mm-hmm. it all out, that's then when you can really step up and mm-hmm. know your role per se, versus now it's a little, you know, it's confusing because it's only been a few days. Mm-hmm. So I maybe just be patient, see how it evolves, but then be there if she needs it. And she'll let you know, I think, if she needs it.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that you had a difficult relationship with your parents makes it just seems that you're the perfect person to be there for and to help her.
Yeah.
I think we got this. And I think that people that are reading this, again, we are going to get support. You're going to get support within the comment lines. And let us know what you did do and how she did respond and how she is in a period of time. Give us a recap. You might wait 6 months, might take you longer, but let us know how you're doing and how she's doing.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're now going to do the click switch. I'm going to snap my fingers. And when I snap them again, you are going to see it's a double snap. First snap, Justin disappears. Second snap, Morgan reappears. And we're going to continue on.
Would you look at that? Magic.
You know, I used to watch Bewitched, and I was trying to watch. What was the uncle, what was his name? Bewitched?
I don't remember.
No, he'll know.
I should know.
It was Samantha.
Yeah, but the uncle, there were a few uncles.
There was Darren, and then there was Uncle.
I don't know. All I have in my head is Uncle Fester.
That's the wrong
from Adam's Family.
That's the one I was thinking of too.
It was.
I know. Funny how that works. Yeah. Let's get back into this though. We have a couple more stories, and I really want to answer them.
Rip away.
Okay, so this one. Trigger warning on this next one to you guys. It does contain talks of abuse as well. This is going to be complicated and a little long, but I'll try to be as clear as possible. I am a 22-year-old female, and my little brother is 20. I should also mention my father is a suspect in this case, so I also fear for my brother's safety. At 16, I caught my father having an affair with one of my best friends' moms. Weeks later, she was murdered in a very public case, and it is still a cold case. After this happened, the curiosity got the best of me, and I started digging. My father had numerous affairs. I'm talking more than 100 over my parents' 20-year marriage. It also came out that he had sexually assaulted me as a child, and from then on, I seemed to be the target. Once I exposed his affair, the anger turned into abuse against my mom and I. It also was revealed that 5 or more of his affairs were with my mom's friends. I also seem to be the main target of his emotional and psychological abuse. He has always discredited me as a child, calling me a liar and always taking everyone else's side but mine. Thankfully, the physical abuse never happened to my little brother, only some psychological and emotional abuse, but never as much as my mom and I. My brother is now 20, and since he never witnessed or experienced the abuse my mom and I received, he wants to reach out as he is still struggling not having a father figure. We haven't spoken to my father in a little over 6 years. When we did try to have a relationship with my father, he was manipulative and psychologically abusive to us and never put my brother or I first. How do I support him in reaching out when I know he will end up hurt as he has every time before? Ideal outcome, be able to support him in the healthiest, safest way possible.
Jimmy, I am going to let you at the mic first.
Well, it just saddens me so much that there certainly shouldn't. You used to hear about abuse with a husband against a wife, but you're hearing so much with a father against kids, especially a daughter. And it's sickening and disgusting. And I can't, you know, imagine that you would want to have anything to do with them. So in that sense, the fact that your brother does is kind of obviously difficult for you. I understand, I guess, your brother's feeling that everybody wants to have a dad. And he wasn't maybe aware, really, of what was going on. But he is aware now. He wasn't aware as a child, but he knows that what the father put you through and your mom through.
I would say somewhat. Based on the writing, at least for me, maybe you could chime in too, it doesn't feel like the brother knows the depths of how bad it was. I think they kind of protected him a little bit.
And you got to remember that life, this is what normal life is for the brother. He may not recognize, even if he saw something dysfunctional, that that's dysfunctional in other people's lives. So let's continue on, Jimmy.
Well, I don't see at this point that you need to go out of the way in letting your brother know that, you know, you're going to make it easy for him to have this relationship with the father, because it hurts you. The father did things to you that is just unspeakable, and it's nothing that you can really forgive, I don't think. So if the brother goes ahead with trying to get a relationship with the father, you can be there for your brother, but that doesn't mean you have to. You don't want to let the brother know that you've forgiven the father. So that's my yeah. thoughts.
Well, I Morgan, you have something that you want to comment?
You can go first.
I clearly think that you certainly have the, and if I'm reading this correctly, she's wondering if she should tell her brother all of the fact and protect the brother. I think that she's absolutely got to tell the brother what is really present, what happened in the life. He has to have full clarity what is acceptable in life and mental health of the kind of guy that does the things that he did and the carrying on that he did in their life, how inappropriate that behavior is. I mean, he was married. He was sleeping around with 100 different people that his mom's best friend. When you saw it, you called him out on it. He made you the liar. He was so narcissistic, he couldn't take any kind of responsibility for any of his own errors. Mm-hmm. The guy's not a healthy guy. And so it goes back to the rule that we had for some of the topics before. Dad's got to go get some assistance, but before you guys start mixing with him, keep him out of your lives until he is healthy enough to bring you into his lives. And if he's not going to get healthy, then you need to have him out of your life. Mm-hmm. Write the letter. Mm-hmm. Because if you write a letter, they can't argue with you.
Yeah. Well, and it sounds, you know, he's been out of their life for 6 years. Mm-hmm. He hasn't been a part of their life. But this is, you know, the question she's asking. How do I support my brother in reaching out when I know he will end up hurt? You don't really have to support him, I don't think. Honestly, no. And I don't think you should. I don't think for you and your mental health, that's healthy. I think you have a conversation with your brother. And like you said, Jimmy, you let him know that you're there for him. But it's not, yes, I support you in reaching out to dad. It's how open you want to be. And you say, you know what, based on the history and the abuse that I've experienced, I don't really want any relationship with our dad going forward. However, I respect you and I know you might. And I am here for you if you ever need anything, and you leave it at that. I want you to feel safe. I want you to be able to come to me if anything goes wrong. I am here for you, but I will not and never will subject myself to that abuse again.
Correct. Totally.
I'm with you.
Yeah. This is a tough one. And I think a lot of these today, they do deal with abuse, and it's kind of hard because as kids who've dealt with abuse, those people, you know, if it's a partner, you can get divorced and you can cease all ties with that person. But when it's a parent, there's this longing to still mend that relationship. And even though you've experienced such terrible things at the hands of these people, there's almost that desire still to know them or maybe fix it or better the relationship or have a positive outcome. And the reality is that sometimes that's just not possible.
Well, do you feel that she should also try to make it such a point that he should obviously will be totally aware of what he's dealing with, and maybe he should seek some assistance in opening that relationship with his father with some guidance on a professional level?
I think family therapy would be amazing. I think personally, before I unloaded all of this trauma on someone who hasn't experienced it, I would have an individual therapy session and just say, hey, like, I don't know how to tell my brother these things, or is it even appropriate that I dump all of these things on my brother? And the therapist might say to you, you should let your brother know all of these things. He should absolutely go into it knowing everything. And then I think the therapist could even facilitate the conversation with you and the brother. Mm-hmm. So your brother can have some pots of coping strategies after learning this.
Or I agree.
Potentially, you know, going into this relationship with your dad again, and your brother can have positive coping strategies to deal with things he might encounter. So I think therapy is really necessary for this one. And, you know, the other one that dealt with abuse, we all need therapy, but I think out of this story so far today, those two really stand out for me, where therapy could be so beneficial.
I think it's absolutely key.
Mm-hmm. And for you too. I mean, you have a lot of healing. It's no easy feat overcoming what you've gone through.
I agree. Got another one?
I do. I have one more for us to wrap it all up.
Okay.
My 25 female in-laws don't respect my or my husband's 28 male wishes about our last name. My in-laws are old and old school, but I love them, and for the most part, we have a good relationship. They do have a history of being a bit controlling, but we've set boundaries and have had some success with helping them to understand that we are not willing to be treated as children. The one thing that hasn't been resolved is the issue of our last name. My in-laws have a very plain, common name, and I don't think it fits me at all. On top of it, my husband and I have very common first names, and he has a history of being mixed up as a different person with the same name. I don't want this for me or my future kids. So before we got engaged, we discussed that we would combine our last names to make a new name that was truly ours. There are other reasons I don't want to abandon my last name that I won't get into. We didn't want to hyphenate, as our names sound strange together, but can be combined into a very elegant sounding new name. My friends and family fully supported this and truly expected nothing else of me. But his parents still aren't on board. As an example, we've been married over 2 years now, and they will still send us mail addressed to Mr. and Mrs., their last name. It's incredibly frustrating. We've corrected them many times, but they just don't get it. My father-in-law seems to care less than my mother-in-law, who is the one usually writing the cards and such, but he is in no hurry to correct her either. I know it's not that big of a deal in the grand scheme of things, but I feel like it's evidence that they don't actually respect us or our life choices. I'd like some advice on how to get them to start addressing us by our actual married name. Is this something that is worth distancing ourselves from them over? How does one set a boundary about a name?
The most important element, I believe, is the communication between you and your husband, and the fact that you both agreed. I can imagine several situations where the wife or the husband might want to do something with their names that the other one doesn't agree with. The fact that you were both on board with this change is marvelous.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really the key. So you should be able to have whatever name you want to have. That is your right. And the fact, and it's great that your family is on board with it. People are stubborn. And obviously, your mother-in-law is one of those people. There are many reasons why families would want to keep the name. There's a lot of tradition there. Usually I could see where it would be more the man that would want to keep the name, not the woman, as far as the you know, your father-in-law would want to keep it, not the mother-in-law. So that's kind of interesting. But I believe it is your husband's responsibility to have a very intense conversation with his mom and straighten her out. I don't think that it should be to the point where you distance yourself, there, unless there's many other problems that we haven't discussed. But your mother-in-law just needs to understand this is how it is, and we believe we deserve the respect of you calling us by our legal name.
Mm-hmm. Jimmy, you're right about one thing. People sometimes take their names very proudly and they don't want to relinquish it. When my parents, our ancestors, came from the old country, our name was Segalov, Sigalov. And my uncles, when they came through, whatever they came in to come in through the country, they actually came through Canada and Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. But when they did come through, their name went from, and this is the best part, they went from Segalov, Sigalov, to Siegel. One uncle was Segal, and the other one was Siegel. And would you believe it or not, the two brothers never spoke, got such a fight about it, they ceased to speak.
And Over that.
Now, my answer was even Jesus. Better. Why, if they were trying to shorten the name, why didn't they just go to L-O-V-E, to love? Now, it's a name. And yes, the history, if I went back to the old country and I went looking, I'd never find Siegel. I would find Siegel Love on head markers. I have pictures of them. The biggest thing is that this is who you are identifying as. And we like to say, get over it. Go to the family member and say, you know, I love you guys. This is our identity. We wanted to merge it this way. You're right. Just respect what we've done and who we want to be addressed by. We are who we are. I mean, you look at Charlie Sheen and his brother, Emilio Estevez. They're brothers. Everyone knows they're brothers. They got two totally different names because of marriage and how whatever.
No, Martin Sheen, his real name, I believe, is Estevez.
That's right.
And so he changed it when he became an actor. Mm-hmm. And one son took that name, and one son took the
original.
Right,
took his historic name. But it's just, again, no one doesn't identify who they are. So maybe the mother-in-law needs to recognize this is who we have become. This is who we are. We do have roots of our name in this. It's part of that root. And just respect it and go along with that.
And by the way I remember this from reading about it decades ago, when families came to Ellis Island, the reason that many of them changed their name was they were still afraid that the authorities from the countries that they originally were from
would chase them down,
track them down. And so they wanted to have a different name so they couldn't be found.
I see.
Yeah, I actually just watched a video on this from like a Jewish historical society or some sort of Ellis Island foundation or something. And it's a misconception that they were forced to change their name when they came through Ellis Island. But right. A lot of that paperwork was done before they even got there. And a lot of it was done for assimilation purposes. Mm-hmm. And there were people that said like, oh, well, they had it changed because people at Ellis Island didn't speak, you know, their language, blah, blah, blah. And that's not true. So it's the history about names and name changes is interesting.
And I think some of it was pronunciation. But for all of you out there, I think I look much more like a Jerry Love than a Jerry Siegel.
Yeah. Well, we do have a little bit more info too on this one where they go on to say, I think my mother-in-law might have told some of her family that I took their name because I've received wedding invitations and such that are addressed to Mr. and Mrs. their name from some of my mother-in-law's extended family. Somehow, this was even more frustrating than when it was just her. Mm-hmm. And so in my head, I'm like, I would get some labels made, you and your husband's names, mm-hmm. Mr. and Mrs., your new last name, printed out.
Smith Meyer.
Whatever it is, I'm sure it sounds cool. Otherwise, you wouldn't have done it. But I mean, describing it, it sounds like it's a good smush together, sounds elegant. Print those labels everywhere. And as you RSVP, it's on the label. Paste it on the line. Mr. and Mrs., blah, blah, blah. Paste it on the name line. And honestly, with your mother-in-law, yeah, your husband needs to lay down the hammer, like Jimmy said, and put a kibosh on this because it's his family of origin. But honestly, don't respond. Anything she sends you with that old last name, don't respond. I didn't get it. Must have been sent to the wrong people.
It could be Mr. Mrs. Schmier now. Schmier is very good. It's SM.
I don't know. I don't know. Whatever it is, it doesn't matter. But I think, you know, if she's going to play this way, you play the way you want to play.
I would just stand tall and just continue on your way. And she could just go bark whatever she wants. And this is our name.
And
I do like your idea of making your labels and send out to your
labels. Yeah.
Make the labels.
Make the labels.
Or the stationery. Beautiful
station.
Both
of it. Both of it. But like she also says, being addressed as a couple with our chosen last name without causing damage to our relationship with his parents is the ideal outcome. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of that is going to have to be in your husband's court and just setting the boundary. If you call us by this last name, you're not going to get a response.
And I guarantee you also, when you have children, if you choose to have children and you have a jersey printed up eventually and they're calling little Johnny Schmier, whatever his name is, they're going to get... The parents are going to eventually, they're going to log into it.
No, I could see them getting the baby onesie that says baby, their last name.
Baby like Smith.
Baby Smith, you know, whatever the original last name was, their son's last name. I could see them just doing that. And
all of a sudden that shirt is just gone.
It's burnt.
It's
a crisp.
It's loaded with car wax.
So I guess asking you both this, what if they never get on board? What do you recommend they do? Husband has a conversation with them, says, hey, mom and dad, this is our new last name. Only refer to us by this. Mm-hmm. But if they never get on board, what do you think they do?
Well, first of all, I have a suggestion, but I don't believe that this is the reason to have a baby. But if and when you do have a child, grandparents, man, they just love to be around those grandkids. They would do almost anything to be around those grandkids.
Even respect and acknowledge your new last name.
Possibly.
Maybe.
Possibly.
Hopeful thinking.
So if they don't come on board, Jerry, what do you think?
I think the parents will come board. I think if the husband actually really goes and lays down the law with his parents and says, mom, this is just not going to work. When you look someone in the eye and you say it's just not going to work and it's causing us a lot of grief and pain, I think that hopefully she will chime on board and respect it.
I mean, you would think so because, you know, maybe I was going to say you'd think so because she knows what it's like to change her last name. But maybe that's why she's so pissed, because she had to change her last name and her husband wouldn't smush.
Who knows? Let us know. Again, we're gonna make this. I want to get a sign that's going to flash.
Just
let us know. Tell us how it's going.
Yeah, for sure.
And I will read the comments because I'm sure a lot of you out there are really going to help us out and give us some great ideas.
Yeah, and I think Justin and I are actually going to create a separate Google form for updates. So I get a lot of comments on the YouTube and on the Instagram where it's like, how can I write in? You know, I'm trying to ask you guys my question. The Google form where you submit your write-in is in the description for the episode on both audio and YouTube. If you happen to have an update, there's now going to be another form because we just get so many write-ins and we mm-hmm. ask for all of these updates and then they kind of get a little lost in the sauce and they're very hard to find. So be sure that you're submitting to the right form, the right link.
And the one that I read is the YouTube ones.
Yes. So if you're your story, your write-in came out in an episode and you're comfortable directly commenting on our YouTube channel, we have gotten updates from the writers in the comments
because
after.
That's the only place I really go when I read, because you gave me that access. We'll see you on Patreon. Come on over and watch it. And again, my goal, Jimmy, is that stuck to the wall or is that thing lift off the wall?
You're not pulling my plaque off.
There is a plaque that says
Justin
YouTube.
Hung it so nice.
100,000. Help us out. Make sure that if you're not a subscriber, please subscribe. More than half of our listeners aren't subscribers. It's not hard. Just press the button. Thanks again so much. We'll see you on Patreon and we'll see you next week. Good night.